Each Sunday, we light 5 candles, reminders for ourselves and our children of the work to create a world that is fair and caring. We strive to make the spaces we inhabit peace sites, dedicated to promoting peace. We affirm the sacredness of sexuality and gender diversity. We honor all sexual orientations and gender identities, as well as people who have none, and deeply value each other's authenticity. We work to build a race-conscious and multicultural community through our actions to dismantle racism and other intersecting oppressions in ourselves and our institutions. We commit to the work of anti-racism and collective liberation. We understand disability as a culture, lived history, and embodied experience, and a product of de-ableing oppressions in society. We work to enable full access and interdependence in our faith community. We are given this one earth and seek to honor this truth by caring for our buildings, our grounds, and all places on this earth in ways that respect the interconnected web of all existence, of which we are but a part. In this spirit, we gather, looking toward the day when all people are inside the candle's warmth and light.
Good morning, everyone. For our visitors here today, I am Reverend Kim Wildchesky. It is my joy to welcome all of you into this hour together, into this time that we have chosen. If this is your first time with us this morning, a very special welcome to you. We know that it's a brave thing to enter a community for the first time, and we are so glad that you chose to today. Whether you are in the sanctuary or signing on, I hope that you will recognize that we are a congregation striving to create community, celebrate life, and change the world. If after this morning's service you'd like to know more and you're here by Zoom, please sign our guest book at the link provided in the chat. And for visitors who are here with us in the sanctuary, there are hard copies of these visitor cards on the table in the lobby for you to fill out and return after the service. As you can see, I am not in the sanctuary this morning, and I'm not actually signed on either. I'm out of town this week and grateful to the Unitarian Universalist Association's Side with Love coordinators, as well as our own wonderful team from the choir to our worship associate to our tech team and many others for giving us many of the resources for today's service. Later in the morning, you'll see me on the screen again offering a sermon by a friend and colleague, the Reverend Darcy Baxter, who will help us further our conversation today on reproductive justice and how we as Unitarian Universalists discuss this very tender, sacred, and necessary conversation, especially as many, many others are doing so quite differently in the public sphere and from other kinds of pulpits with significant life-altering implications. As you know, it has been 49 years since Roe v. Wade, and depending on our age, our gender, our lived experience, we will each come to this conversation differently. I invite all of us to come with open hearts, minds, and tender compassion like you would any other day on any other topic. So let us draw our hearts here to this time. This is an opportunity right now for stillness. To feel the weight of the world, yes, in our bodies, but also to open ourselves to the spirit of life. Let us try to gather ourselves up, try to settle our bodies, call attention to our breathing, and let our hands, hearts, and minds spread wide. Today would not be the same if you hadn't chosen to be here.
Sing with us, Guide My Feet, which is number 348 in the hymn.
Thank you.
These are the words of the Reverend Elizabeth M. Strong. Seek for the spirit of life that is within you, that you might know more fully its power and strength. Seek for the spirit of life that surrounds you, that you might know more fully its connection to you. Seek for the spirit of life that is within others, that you might enter more fully into the community that embraces us this day and every day. It is in this spirit that we join with hundreds of Unitarian Universalists in lighting a chalice, symbol of our faith and a beacon of hope. As we light our chalices today, may we be reminded that we are connected to one another and to a larger community of faith and love. Please join me in our chalice lighting words. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
Good morning, everybody. It's so good to see you. Okay, so this morning I wanted to talk about a sticky situation. And it's a story about how do we know what is right and wrong? During recess, Kaya and her friends make plans to go ice skating after school. It's a beautiful winter day, and Kaya has new skates. Before school lets out, the teacher makes a brief announcement, and one of the children in Kaya's class has been in the hospital and came home yesterday. The teacher asks for a volunteer to take the child some get well cards and that the class made. Kaya looks around the room. No one raised their hand. Kaya walks by the child's house on her way home. But if she stops, she won't have time to get the ride to the ice skating rink. Still, no one has volunteered. What should Kaya do? So every day, many times a day, people have to make choices about what to do. And sometimes we have to think about what the right thing to do and what the wrong thing to do is. And if you recall when you have seen someone do a right or a wrong thing, how do you know that these actions feel right or wrong? Like, where do you feel it? When we are not sure what to do, we can look at the values we learn at church and at home. When the children light a chalice, one thing they say is, we are the church of the helping hands. And our second principle tells them, be kind in all you do. So I can tell you that the right thing to do here is to use your helping hands and deliver the cards. But I will hold up that the teacher asked for volunteers. Some people might think, well, it's a volunteer. I don't have to volunteer. Or maybe someone else will volunteer. And I guess I hope that as Unitarian Universalists, you can lean back on those values and step up to them and be kind in all you do and use your helping hands. And that's our story.
A reading from the Reverend Joan Javier Duval titled, Freedom to Flourish. As Unitarian Universalists, we believe all life is sacred and that all people, including and especially those whose bodies can carry pregnancies, have sacred agency and sovereignty over their bodies. Many faith traditions declare that all people have the inherent right to make ethical and moral decisions about their bodies, as painful as these decisions may be at times. The direct personal experience of our own lives is a sacred source of authority in choosing our own path and future. It is bad theology to claim a concern for the sanctity of life on the one hand, while legislating other people's bodies, ignoring children dying at the border, trans women murdered in the streets, the continued defunding of public education, and fossil fuel-induced ecological catastrophe on the other. We all want freedom. The freedom to live and love without fear or condemnation. The freedom to be well and whole in body, mind, and spirit. The freedom to flourish. Our reproductive freedom is a necessary part of the wellness and flourishing that we all desire and we all deserve.
I'd like to invite you into a posture of quietness, meditation. Find yourself in a space, in a comfortable spot where you can accept a blessing. I invite you to join me in touching my hands to the area of my body that is being blessed, if you wish. Begin with your forehead. May you be blessed with wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. May your intellect take you far on your journey. You have been blessed with reason and free will. It is your call every day to use these gifts. Now your throat. May you be blessed with voice. May you learn the complex nature of truth-telling, the ability to speak the truth in love that is something that requires honesty, empathy, and care. You are challenged every day to seek the joy that comes with sharing your truth compassionately, as well as listening to others. Your heart. May your heart be full and blessed with love. May you know the agony of heartbreak as it is intertwined with the elation of true love. Your heart is a strong and resilient organ, one that will be with you until the end of your time on earth. May you heed the wisdom of your heart and always trust the truth it tells. Your abdomen. You are blessed with the gift of sexuality. May you always remember that you are a beloved child of God. Your body is sacred and belongs to you and you alone. May you live into the full expression of your identity as a human being, embracing your true sexuality and gender identity. The gift of sexuality brings with it many rewards as well as great responsibility. May you always retain power over your own being, striving toward mutually fulfilling and just relationship. Now your hands. When you were a baby, your tiny hands were your first contact with the world. Before you could see more than a few feet in front of your face, you grasped the finger of your loved ones. You catch yourself with your hands when you fall, and you express love and comfort to others with them too. May your hands be gentle and strong. May you use them to carry light into the darkness and rest to the weary. May your hands always find the place of greatest need, beginning with your own, and may the Creator of all things hold you in the palm of their hand wherever you go. and now your whole body. May you be blessed on your journey. May you remember that growth happens on this journey and that you are never alone. May you always remember that you are a whole person, that each of these parts work together. We offer our blessings upon you, body, mind, and spirit. May you be guided by compassion and truth, justice and love. May you find rest on your journey, always remembering where you came from, being mindful that your ancestors stand behind you, whether they are present on earth or have gone back to the soul of the world. May you be blessed in all things and carry blessings with you wherever you go. Amen and blessed be.
Spirit of Life is number 123 in your hymnal.
In the welcome, this sermon is not my own. It was written and delivered by a good friend of mine, the Reverend Darcy Baxter. It is entitled Love, Morality, and Reproductive Justice, and a version of this sermon was first delivered in February of 2015. This sermon is shared with permission, and as I said, I feel honored to offer Darcy's words to you this morning. This is what she says. Last week was the 43rd anniversary since the historical Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision. Now, as most of you know, we Unitarian Universalists overwhelmingly support reproductive rights. And there is a complicated story that has unfolded in the years since Roe v. Wade passed. One of our struggles as UUs is how to answer that question we get asked. So what do Unitarian Universalists believe, or what does it mean to be a Unitarian Universalist? A common response I've heard to these identity questions is Unitarian Universalists can believe whatever you want. Somehow many of us UUs have come to think of ourselves as anything and everything instead of something very particular. But working on a national abortion hotline after college, I learned how very specific and particular my Unitarian Universalism was. Melissa called from a big, square Midwestern state. She had little money, and the closest place to get an abortion was over 500 miles away. Her situation is not unusual. Unless you live close to a metropolitan area, you're looking at a journey like Melissa was. She was early enough along that she had some time to raise some money before the cost would rise, but things were not looking so good for her. And that's when I found myself telling her to go to church. This is going to sound crazy to you, I said to Melissa, but I'm really not kidding. There is a Unitarian Universalist church about 100 miles from you. Call there, tell them you just talked to this abortion hotline and the counselor you spoke to was Unitarian and told you to call. I know this sounds crazy, but this church is not like a lot of other churches. It is part of our tradition that we support women accessing abortion services.
Maybe there's a doctor there in the congregation, or maybe someone in the congregation knows somebody. I know this doesn't sound right, but it's the only other thing I can think of right now. After I hung up the phone, another counselor looked at me kind of strangely. Did you just send that woman to a church to help her with an abortion? Yes. Yes, I did. That day, I didn't think twice about referring that Melissa in middle of a big square Midwestern state to her closest UU congregation. With so much stigma and shame attached to women's pregnancy decisions, I could not have just sent Melissa to anything and everything kind of church. I've asked myself since, why didn't I think twice? Why did I feel it was safe to refer Melissa to a UU congregation? I could cite to you the 10 resolutions our congregational delegates have passed in support of women's access to abortion care at UU General Assemblies. I could tell you about the history of women suffragists in our congregations. I could tell you how Roe v. Wade itself was forged in the chapel of the First Unitarian Church in Dallas, Texas. But I did not have those facts that day working on the hotline. What I did have was my experience going through our comprehensive sexually education program about your sexuality, the precursor to today's Our Whole Lives. I trust you use with women's well-being because when my friends were going to church for confirmation classes, first communion, or a bar or bat mitzvahs, I was going to church to learn about sexuality, power, protection, and yes, to learn about abortion as an option for folks dealing with unintended or complicated pregnancies. What I did have was my father's upbringing in a Unitarian church that provided the local Planned Parenthood with their first home. What I did have was being raised in a Unitarian congregation where my minister, the late Reverend Nick Cardell, was one of the many UU clergy who was part of the clergy consultation service, a network of clergy who referred women to illegal but safe abortion providers in the days before Roe v. Wade. What I had those days working on the hotline and these days preaching out in the world is the lived, embodied experience of growing up in UU communities. Growing up UU did not just teach me anything and everything. It taught me something. It taught me to be someone very particular. According to my grandmother, the one who first joined the UU church in Rochester, I likely have some ancestors who walked off the Mayflower. My family lineage, from those Puritans to my parents, show that I am so white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. I am so waspy that if you stand next to me quietly, you just might actually hear me buzz. Unitarian Universalism is a religious tradition born from mostly white English Puritans that stumbled off the Mayflower. It is a religious tradition born from the people that eventually rebelled against those traditional white Calvinist Puritans. Our particular religious heritage is the culture from which much of our legal system was created, the culture people consider dominant American culture. Our particular religious heritage believes that we need not think alike to love alike. The difference is good and important, and that we hold sacred the freedom to pursue one's conscience. Maybe at this point, you're wondering what any of this has to do with reproductive justice. Heck, maybe you are wondering if I'm ever going to even tell you exactly what reproductive justice is. Rest assured, here that part comes. Loretta Ross, a scholar, activist, and movement leader, could be considered the godmother of the reproductive justice movement. Many of the stories that are told about reproductive justice come from Ms. Ross. 2 years ago, I was at a conference with her. And during one of the plenary sessions, Ms. Ross got up and asked this question: why is it that the only folks that are proud of being white are neo-Nazis and white supremacists? What about healthy whiteness? Indeed, where are the healthy white folks? The white folks working for justice with humility, resilience, and perspective. White folks grounded in their own stories and heritages without being mired down and paralyzed in guilt and shame. This question about whiteness is essential in understanding reproductive justice because reproductive justice is a movement, worldview, and methodology that was born in part in response to what we could call unhealthy whiteness. Reproductive justice emphasizes that everything is connected and insists that people refuse to isolate or pit important social issues against each other. Instead, reproductive justice advances human rights across the interdependent web of social justice issues. As the advocacy group Forward Together puts it in their Strong Families Initiative, reproductive justice calls on us to work towards a world where every person and family has the rights, recognition, and resources they need to make decisions about their gender, their bodies, and their sexuality, where every person, family, and community has what they need to flourish. Notice that in this definition, there is no specific mention of abortion. Notice that my opening story, the story that this WASPI minister opened with, is about abortion. While legal abortion is essential for our families to flourish, it is not sufficient. Legal abortion alone does not guarantee that every person, family, and community have what they need to flourish. Women of color leaders like Loretta Ross found that many of the reproductive rights organizations were hyper-focused on legalized abortion and ignoring so many other realities and experiences of women and families. And even if abortion is legal, it may not be accessible, which is the situation Melissa was in. Do you have the money to pay for it? Do you have a ride to the clinic? Is there a clinic you can even drive to? Can you get time off of work if you have a babysitter for your children? If you have children, are they growing up in an environment with adequate healthcare and education? Is your family treated with dignity and respect, or do you feel stigmatized and unwanted? While legal abortion is essential, it is not sufficient. And yet many white, middle, and upper-class women leading prominent reproductive rights organizations focused almost exclusively on legal abortion. Particularly in the past few years, I have come to ask myself why I started working on the National Abortion Hotline, why abortion came to mean so much to me, a white, WASPI, middle-class lesbian. So I spent some time observing, trying to understand, and eventually I found my answer. And it came in the voice of reproductive justice activist Vanessa Danielle, founder of the Groundswell Fund. She shared that from her vantage point, she sees that white women feel pressured by society to have nice white babies. So abortion came to represent liberation and freedom for many white women. But many women of color have experienced just the opposite. They have felt pressured not to have brown and black children. Tragically, many women of color have been forcibly sterilized without their consent or even knowledge. They would visit a medical clinic to deliver a baby or to have a procedure for fibroids, and they would come out sterilized. It is a sad reality that prospective adoptive parents prefer light-skinned or white babies. One only needs to look at the realities in adoption practices to see the sad truth in this statement. Studies show that Black children are less likely to be adopted than white children. For white, middle, and upper-class women, abortion became a powerful symbol of liberation and freedom. I think this is the reason so many white, middle, and upper-class women have dedicated so much energy to abortion over the past 40 years, because they, or in my case, I should probably say we were fighting for liberation and freedom, and who doesn't want to do that? But I think we, middle and upper-class white folks, forgot that what was liberation and freedom for some of us, a very particular and specific group of people, was not liberation and freedom for all. We forgot that we were not anything and everything. We white reproductive rights leaders were very specific and particular. While some people need support in dealing with unintended or complicated pregnancies, many other people want and need support to have children and need support to raise their children with dignity and respect, need support having the resources so that their families can flourish. And in the messy realities of our lives, these two groups are not so easily divided along lines of race, ethnicity, or class. Many of us will need one kind of support, one at one point in our lives, and need other kinds of support at a different point of our lives. We need many symbols and methods of liberation. We all need a whole lot of ways to be free and flourishing. We all need so many kinds of love. What is the role of liberal religion and Unitarian Universalism in the movement for reproductive justice? We need to be church folks who know our stories, who know where we come from and why we believe the things we do. We need to stop saying you use can believe anything. We need to be the church folks who say, the next time Miss Loretta Ross asks, where are all the healthy white folks at? We need to be the church folks who say loudly and proudly, specifically and particularly, a whole bunch of us are right here. May it be so. Blessed be, and amen.
Today, and I don't really feel like they have the right to take more than they already have from us away. This ain't about that, or has it really been all along? No, this ain't about that. If you want to focus on right and wrong, shouldn't schools have better sexual education or contraception information for once? Only 24 states require sex ed, so more than half of US teens need a condom. The problem's abortion. Focus on what's going on. It is an abortion. If you want to focus on right and wrong, this is my body. This is my choice. A painful decision. But you aren't gonna steal my voice. It isn't just morals, and it's not black and white. We will govern our bodies. It's our legal right. Let's make the fight. Did you know that many think the morning after pill is an atrocity that should be banned? Maybe men should get vasectomies and get them reversed. Once they find a woman who'll take their hands. This ain't about that. This is all about what's legally life, what's an issue of law is turning into one of moral strifes. Life is an equivalent based on definition. You must account for experience. And remember that a fetus requires another body to give them their sustenance. The courts can't force us to donate organs or blood of our own. This is no exception. We can face our repercussions alone. This is my body. This is my choice. A painful decision. But you aren't gonna steal my voice. It isn't just morals, and it's not black and white. This is my body. It's my legal right. Listen. Doctors will be scared of making any incision, which means they won't be acting on their best medical decision. Should they just make an attempt, which is not defined, they face 99 years of prison down the line. And yet let's say they don't perform because they're scared of spending time. Say the patient gets sick and sues the doctor for the crime. This all affects the healthcare system for you and me, facing higher doctors' bills to balance liability. And everybody's terrified and everybody's ill. Meanwhile, thousands could use help just getting themselves on the pill. There are way too many babies and the population's growing. We're running out of water and the rate of death is slowing. Adoptions are hard, the foster system saturated, but an 11-year-old's birth just because she's impregnated by an uncle or rando who held her down and raped her. She was too afraid to tell, and it didn't show till 3 months later. And now she has the blessing to ruin her life and her physique while to carry on the genes of men who violate the weak. I don't think so.
For every woman who's ever had
get on her knees. Stand up. For every woman who has ever had to say please, stand up. Stand up. This is my body. This is my choice. I pay for the decision. You aren't gonna steal my voice. It isn't as moral, and it's not black and white. This is our body, and there are legal rights. Let's make a fight. Oh, let's make a fight. Let's make a fight.
It's a beautiful and powerful song. The term reproductive justice was coined by 12 black women in Chicago to provide a framework beyond choice and beyond a sole focus on abortion access. Here are the four principles of reproductive justice, as stated by Reverend Rob Keithan in a sermon called Sex, Religion, Abortion, and Justice. First, people have a right not to have children, but also, second, people have a right to have children. Third, people have a right to raise their children in safe and healthy environments. And fourth, every person has a right to health and self-determination regarding their bodies and sexuality, free from oppression and shame. New laws, such as those in Texas and on March 23rd in Idaho, are creating bounty systems which are denying the basic dignity of the women whose bodies are directly affected. To quote the Reverend Darcy Roque in a statement she delivered in 2018 at the First Unitarian Society Public Forum on Reproductive Rights, "The first principle of Unitarian Universalism is the inherent worth and dignity of each individual, which also directly connects to our seventh, the interconnected web of which we all are a part. Our individual selves, whether we like it or not, are interconnected in relationships, policy, the very survival of our planet. One of the reasons that reproductive justice resonates is that it is firmly centered in the leadership and experience of women of color, who, as a group, are most disproportionately affected by horrific policy outcomes. And in doing so, reproductive justice provides the foundation for one of the most inclusive, justice-centered movements. In this spirit, we can lift up this inclusive, justice-centered movement with our financial affirmations. 50% of the plate at each service is designated for just this: social justice causes and projects who need our voices, our values, and our financial assistance. As always, to make a donation, you may use the church website, donate through PayPal, set up e-banking, or send a check through the mail directly to the church. For more information, please visit the UUCWC website. The link is in the chat. Remember to assist our treasurer by noting on your check or the memo line of your PayPal donation that your gift is for the weekly plate. Your generosity and affirmation is greatly appreciated. Abortion as a Blessing by Reverend Julia Hamilton. Abortion is not just a deeply personal choice and a fundamental right, but it can also be a blessing. It is a life-saving medical procedure. It is a choice that can help heal from violence. It is a doorway to a different life. It is a blessing to so many people who, for whatever reason, are not in a position to have a child. So I say thank you and bless you to all those doctors and nurses and clinicians who have provided abortion care, often at great personal risk. I say thank you and bless you to all those who have stood at the doors of clinics and escorted patients with love and compassion in the face of hate and shame. I say thank you and bless you to all the friends, partners, and family members who have supported loved ones through the process. I say thank you and bless you to all the elected officials, activists, and organizers who fight year after year to keep abortion legal, safe, and available to all who need it. And I say thank you and bless you to all of you here today who have had an abortion. You are loved and supported in your choice and in the life you live today because of that choice. As we go forth from this moment and out into this beautiful and heartbreaking world, we are renewed by the strength we have found in one another. We will fight shame with love, we will fight violence with compassion, and we will fight language of domination with songs of liberation and grace. And we know that we are not singing alone. Please join Dr. Esai Barnwell and a virtual choir from our UUA General Assembly in 2021 in singing We Are, number 1051. Watch for a few of our members singing too. If you have a chalice at home, please lift it and extinguish them with us. We extinguish this chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These remain kindled until we meet again.